All right, now, courtesy of Eastside Kia, we bring on our friend, our pal, our buddy, Eric DeHatchuk from the Globe and Mail, globesports.com. How are you?
I'm good. So, kids, you're talking about kids today. Well, I wrote about a kid today, Matthew Tkachuk.
I know.
And apparently he was quite the sensation at Morning Skates today, I'm told, or at least that's what social media made it seem
well,
like.
Well, I'm not surprised. I got a phone call from our sister station yesterday. They wanted me to come on and talk about Matt Tkachuk because I think he played in London, which might be close. I don't know. And he might have played with their kid, so maybe there was some interest.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Marner and Matthews and all those other things. But I think he's, a lot of people wanted to give him a hard time for the game against the Oilers on Saturday. Yeah. How did you feel about this? I mean, I thought, you know, in this day and age, if you're down in a game like that and you want to, you know, get out there and you know, make yourself known to the opposition and say that this isn't right, I'm okay with that, you know. I'm okay with that.
That's what his makeup is. That's what that team needed more of. You know, watching that game, and Eric, I don't, you know, you've seen this battle in many incarnations. It's not truly what it used to be, and it won't be until it gets back to the playoffs.
Right.
But you know how detrimental a butt kicking like that in front of your own fans is by that team. Somebody had to care. And to me, Matt Tkachuk was one of the few guys that seemed to care.
Yeah, that's my take on it too, and that's why I guess I shouldn't pay as much attention to social media, but I couldn't help but notice that especially the Oilers fans were getting all over him. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? If that kid played for Edmonton and the situation was reversed, and it has been reversed for a long time, notwithstanding, you know, Edmonton won all the games this year. If you look at Calgary's record against the Oilers over the past 10 years, it's been pretty good, and a lot of the gloating has been going on by fans on this side of the battle or the skirmish or whatever you want to call it now, because it hasn't been that great a battle, as you say, for a while. But I like him. I haven't spoken to him much. I talked to him when they made the Memorial Cup and went up to Red Deer to spend some time with him and Ulevi, you know, partly because it looked like there was a chance that they could fall to the Flames. Was impressed by him. Knew his dad, you know, covered him for a long time in the National Hockey League. Was surprised that he made the team, because I know that the plan was that, you know, all things being equal, they would like to send him back for one more year of junior to just sort of, you know, that's just the more traditional path. But you know, he played himself onto the team, and they, you know, they had to change the plan, and that's good. I mean, to me, that shows a management group that is willing to if you have a preconceived notion, you are willing to allow to adapt from the position you staked out by what you see on the ice. And I think that's, you know, it's proven to be the right thing. Now, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, I mean, we were saying almost the same things about Sam Bennett when he came in his first season. He was a guy that, you know, to play really feisty, the comparisons to Doug Gilmore were there. And you know, they were fair, I thought. And so somehow the progression that they had hoped to see from Bennett hasn't happened. And I know you guys have been kicking it around, not just today, but for a little while right now. Is he a center? Is he a winger? Would he be better served to play on the wing? Would he be better served to be in the minors? You know, to me, I mean, if you're asking me, you probably haven't, but I'm going to tell you anyway, I would put him on the wing right now. Okay. And I just think that it's an easier position to play. And the comparison that you frequently hear internally in the Flames organization is, you know, we don't want to go down the same path that Montreal did with Galchenyuk, because Galchenyuk came up as a center, drafted as a center. They hid him, you know, for lack of a better word, on the wing for a number of years, and then finally made the decision to move him to center. And he's flourished as a center, notwithstanding the, you know, two injuries he's had. He's been really good. So to me, the Galchenyuk example is proof that for the first 3 or 4 years, a guy can play on the wing and still eventually make the transition to center when you become physically more mature, when you get more comfortable and confident in the National Hockey League. If you move him to the wing now, it isn't a life sentence. And I think it takes some of the pressure off him right now in the moment. So that's what I would do. It's just not a 200-foot game if you're playing on the wing. So it's never easy in the National Hockey League, but it is easier to play that position. And I think that if he did play that position, I think he would relax a little bit more. I think he would get back to being the player that we saw last year playing with Frolik and Backman. I get why they don't want to break up that line right now, because Tkachuk's been such a good fit on it. But I would almost be tempted to give Bennett 10 games there and maybe move Tkachuk around a little bit, because I think he could play on any line right now. And maybe playing with those two guys, Backlund and Frolik, gets Bennett back on track too.
Here's what I like about Matt Tkachuk as opposed to some of the other young Flames players that have come up. And I think in many ways I'm guilty, as I'm a guilty party in this. I think for so many years the Flames never had good young players. So all of a sudden they started having good young players, and I think we got ahead of ourselves because we don't remember what good young players were all about. Matt Tkachuk has come in. He wasn't supposed to make the team. He did. And not only has he made the team, he's playing on the top line with the top defensive responsibility early on. Sean Monahan was kind of sheltered his first couple of years. He's not a centerman. Sam Bennett almost got built up more because of his injury and the fact that he wanted to come back and how bad he wanted to come back, and he came back with a lot of energy. Yeah. Matt Tkachuk has just gotten better as the season has gone on. Let me ask you the other one. This one perturbs me a little bit. That it was not my point. It was Dean who was the first guy. Dean brought it up this morning about sending him to the American Hockey League. Why not send him to the American Hockey League?
Well,
I'm talking about Bennett now.
As opposed to playing him in the NHL on the wing.
Yep.
So for what, 2 weeks?
2 weeks. Go down.
Similar to what Edmonton's done with Puljujarvi.
Yeah, go down. Get your confidence back. Play up the middle. Just play every situation, because he's by his own definition, by the team's own definition, and by his own play, when he is at his ultimate confidence, cockiness even.
Yeah.
He is a great player. I don't think he has that right now. Yeah. He might be pouting because he got sat. He might pout because he goes down. But to me, put him down there. Let him get his confidence and his swagger back.
Yeah, well, I guess that would be a possibility. I think you could do it by shifting him to the wing and keeping him in the National Hockey League. And partly it's, you know, I think they need him here. I think they need Sam Bennett playing better than he is right now if they want to compete for a playoff spot. So I'm not sure that, you know, sending him to the minors, especially if it was just a short cameo thing. Like, you know, if you're talking about 1 to 2 weeks, I'm not sure that would necessarily accomplish very much in terms of getting his confidence back on track. Now, having said that, if you tried him on the wing, and we're kind of in a weird situation because, you know, now you've got three games, and then you've got the All-Star break, and then you've got the break after that. You know, it's probably too late to do it right now. You know, they've got three games in 4 nights, and now you just have to play, I think, and see if you can get points. That's the other thing. I mean, they need to start, you know, getting points. The top three teams in the Pacific Division have created a gap now on the teams that remain. So now you're firmly in the wild card race, and while you have a wild card position, it's, you know, by no means is it secure. So so you need to start winning, and, you know, I think 3 out of 6 points on this trip is critical to go into the All-Star break, because I think if you get 3 out of 6 or 4 out of 6, you're probably still in the top 8. But I would be tempted to try him on the wing first, and if it doesn't work, and if the production doesn't come, and if he looks frustrated, then maybe, you know, the next resort is sending him to the minors. I don't think he's at that point yet.
Eric Dachuk from the Globe and Mail, our guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Since we're talking about the local hockey heroes, I'm not sure if you've heard, but it seems like the future of the general manager has been thrown somewhat into question. And I don't want to say by irresponsible journalism. I think Elliot Friedman's done a nice job of chronicling this. And it was on the morning show today suggesting that, you know, he does not have a new deal and maybe he doesn't come back. Where are you at on the possibility of a change at that position?
Well, I think it would be very short-sighted if they did that. I mean, you know, go back to the moment when they were introducing Brad Treliving as the general manager. Why did they hire him? You know, Brian Burke said he was ultimately he put together a list of people that he wanted to talk to, and Treliving's name was at the top of all those lists. Once he spoke to Brad, he said, "I didn't feel I needed to speak to anybody else because he impressed me so much with his ideas and his energy and just his forward-thinking vision of where to go." So that was 2.5 years ago, and I think it was either said or at least, you know, implied that you know, when you do hire a young general manager, somebody who has apprenticed as an assistant general manager but has never been that guy where the buck stops there, you know, you understand that there will be a learning curve. And so in the same way that, you know, we're talking about Sam Bennett's learning curve, Matthew Tkachuk's, Johnny Gaudreau's, Sean Monahan, the same general rules of thumb that apply on the ice also apply in the management suite. You know, you go out and you sign, you know, Mason Raymond and it doesn't work out. You sign Derek Englund and it works a little bit better. But, you know, you make you make decisions, and some of them work out and some of them don't. But I think that if you look at the organization today compared to where it was 2.5 years ago, I think that they've taken positive strides. And has it been a straight upward curve? No. But then, you know, that rarely happens in professional sports. So I think he's done a really good job. And I think the organization has invested 2.5 years. And I think he's a better general manager today than he was when he first started, a more confident general manager. His voice is known among his colleagues in the league. How are you further ahead if you decide, no, he's not our guy, we're going to go out and hire someone else? You know, is there an experienced guy out there that you think would be better? I can't think of anybody. And so, and then if you decide that you want to bring an inexperienced guy in, then you've hit the reset button and you're starting all over again. So I just think that it would be, I mean, I get why they haven't signed him to a contract extension, because that's the way they want to do business here. Sure. That's fine. I think everybody wants to have security. That's why players want long-term contracts, because it provides security. I think the same is true of coaches. I think the same is true of managers. But I think that if you evaluate the work that he's done, the work has been very good. And I think if you project where this team is going and sort of the confidence that he's getting as a manager, it makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me that you would even ponder a change right now. It's not a disaster. It's trending in the right direction. Yep. The team is younger. It's better. It's maybe not where you want it to be in terms of its development, but there are good pieces in place. And these good pieces, as they mature with a new coaching staff, I think are going to pay dividends within 1 to 2 years right now.
I know that the story came up on Saturday during the game. So The next part that I am going to say is somewhat counterintuitive and actually factually incorrect. But something tells me if they didn't get their doors blown off by their provincial rivals at home, it's probably not carrying the day.
No, you're probably right. But you make a great point there, or you imply a great point, which is that you don't make long-term decisions for your organization on the basis of one ugly loss. And that's what that was. That was an ugly loss.
I mean,
there's no point in sugarcoating it. It was an ugly loss. Edmonton, had played the night before. They were playing their backup goaltender. The situation was right for you to go in there and win, and you played a good game against them in their building the week before. I think everyone just assumed that they were going to beat them, and then not only did they lose, but they lost in a really unfortunate way. And so, but if you made every decision on the basis of that, then you would be constantly trading players, you would be constantly firing people, and you would eventually be one of those organizations that doesn't have a direction and doesn't have stability. I mean, what makes the Calgary Stampeders so good? They are good because there is a continuity to them and a structure and a hierarchy that works. And so everybody comes in and everybody knows what their job is. And, there's a year after year consistency there. And I think it comes from stability. So if you get a reputation as an organization that the minute you hit a little bit of a swell in the river, that you're going to throw everybody overboard, then you never get anywhere. You're just constantly bailing at that point. And so when I see organizations, and it doesn't happen so much in professional sport, but there was a time when people would just do knee-jerk things. Mm-hmm. And I think that a knee-jerk reaction never works. It never works. And so to imagine that would be the right response to one very disheartening loss is ridiculous, really.
So let's leave the local hockey heroes and let's talk about another story that is percolating, but is along these same lines, and that is the Boston Bruins, who really had a tough week. And Claude Julien remains one of the longest, I think one of the three longest tenured coaches in the National Hockey League after Jack Capuano got let go last week. There seems to be a watch in place there. Are we dealing with an inevitability here?
Maybe, but the one thing I would say to that is that that there has been sort of speculation about Claude Julien's future in Boston the last couple of years after the playoffs didn't go the way that they thought. And to the Bruins' credit, they said, no, Claude Julien is a good coach. He is an established coach. His track record suggests that it would be hard to do better than him. And so they did not do the knee-jerk thing, and they kept him on, and they said, let's keep going with this to see where we're at. And I do think, and I know I've said this to you before, that once in a while, you do get to that point where the voice
Yep.
You know, the echoes and people aren't hearing it anymore. And it looks a little bit from the outside as if that's what's happening in Boston. So, but I think that if they made a change there, you know, they can reasonably say, and I think the Islanders could reasonably say that after 7.5 years with Jack Capuano, you know, we gave this guy an opportunity. We know that, you know, the next step is that he's going to get hired by somebody and he's going to go and do a good job there. In the same way that, you know, when Barry Trotz gets let go, you're pretty sure he's wherever he lands next, mm-hmm. he's going to do a good job. Bruce Boudreau gets let go. All of a sudden, Minnesota's the top team in the Western Conference. These coaches that are well established and have good track records are going to go in and they're going to have success. And knowing full well that if you let Claude Julien go, he will probably be a very successful coach at his next NHL stop. Sometimes it's still the necessary thing to do to get a fresh voice in there. And you notice I didn't say the right thing to do because I don't think it's ever the right thing to do to fire the coach because the players don't respond anymore, because the general manager has allowed, you know, some of those players that have been there to get older and not been able to replace them. And so, but sometimes it's the necessary thing to do, and it wouldn't surprise me if something, you know, gives in Boston fairly soon.
It just, this one is one of the, you know, at least Capuano, for, you know, all intents and purposes, came after a win, and you know, maybe not surprising, but it was a little surprising, the timing. It's just watching these Boston losses and then watching the media have to go in, and I do believe that management has created somewhat of this situation where, because there's no formal endorsement, now it's almost a death watch.
Yeah, well, and that's right, but I also think that, you know, you know, what can they say? I mean, if they formally were to say, no, you know, we're going to, you know, play it out until the end of the season and then make the change in 3 weeks, you know, it's a challenging situation that they find themselves in. But I always find when you get to the point where you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, and that's just not fans and media, that's players too, then you almost have to make a change too. And when players are waiting for the other shoe to drop, you can feel that when you walk in the dressing room. I haven't been in the Boston Bruins dressing room all season, so I don't know that I can feel that, but right. I suspect that the people who are in there every day can feel that. So the players themselves are waiting to see, you know, is he going to be here this week? Is he going to be here next? And it affects performance. It just does. Mm-hmm. You know, in the same way that any uncertainty that you have in your workplace affects performance, it affects professional ice hockey players too. And so I think that that's the situation that Boston is in. And I don't think that there's any way to really remedy that. I don't think, you know, statements from, you know, managers and presidents of team are going to allay those concerns. And I think that once that sort of slippery slope starts, that it's a very hard thing to reverse.
Good stuff, my friend. We'll hook up with you again on Wednesday. We'll get Al involved, the East West Hot Stove. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, thanks, Rob.